Let's go to item 21, which would be a update on CWD management.
Good afternoon again, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, Secretary Hepler. The heat index is 101 outside, and this guy cannot wait to get this long sleeve shirt, jacket, and this tight thing off around my neck. So
you can do it. You can do it.
In all seriousness, I appreciate you your willingness to keep continuing through the agenda. As Andy and I have a presentation here on chronic wasting disease, a very important topic that we want to get in front of you commissioners here today, which will kind of be the sounding board for us to start moving forward on some other items. So yeah, this presentation is kind of laying the foundation for further efforts on chronic wasting disease management and the cooperative effort that we foresee moving forward with numerous stakeholders across the state. So chronic wasting disease, commonly referred to the acronym CWD. Most of you are probably pretty familiar with the disease. We just want to inform you, in particular, Commissioner Locken, I don't know what your background is on chronic wasting disease. Don't want to pin you out here or point you out, but just to try to provide an informative presentation here on the disease and justify why we feel it's important to move forward in the direction that we're going to be proposing to you down the future. So again, as we go through this, feel free to call time out, stop us. If there's questions, just let us know. We'll stop and go through those as we have a slide up. So chronic wasting disease is an issue for both captive and non-captive cervids. Cervids are deer, white-tailed deer, mule deer, and elk within South Dakota. Presentation outline there just real briefly. Just a disease overview that Andy's going to touch upon in addition to transmission, the disease impacts to those cervid populations, the distribution, and some results of our past and somewhat current surveillance efforts of chronic wasting disease. And then I'll jump back in here and go over some updates on an internal work group we have currently working on some things, some objectives that the work group has identified we feel is important moving forward, a summary, and then any questions at the end. But again, if there's any questions during the presentation, feel free to ask. So I'm gonna turn this over to Andy to keep us going.
Good afternoon, Andy Lindblom, Senior Big Game Biologist for our listening audience. I'm gonna jump right in here and start us off with a general overview on chronic wasting disease. So CWD is a fatal brain disease of cervids. As Chad mentioned, be members of the cervidae family in South Dakota, be our deer species and elk. And it's caused by an abnormal protein called a prion. It's actually a misfolded and infectious prion. There are a few other cervid species that have been able to get CWD in other states. Moose and reindeer would be included in that. CWD is in a category of diseases called TSEs, or transmissible spongiform encephalopathies. Don't ask me to say that too many times. Some other TSEs you may be familiar with in other species would be scrapie in sheep and goats, BSC, or bovine spongiform encephalopathy in cattle, also called mad cow disease. Mink farms also deal with a TSE. And then in humans, one TSE would be Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease. So an important thing about CWD is that it's always fatal. There's currently no vaccine, treatment, or cure for an animal that gets CWD. No cases of human prion disease have been associated with chronic wasting disease. There does appear to be a substantial species barrier. The disease is not naturally went outside of the cervid family. There's no evidence of natural transmission to humans, livestock, or any other non-cervid species. But under laboratory conditions and unnatural conditions at times, there have been other species infected with CWD, rodents, some carnivores, different livestock species, and monkeys. Because of the concern for TSEs in general and health organizations' desire to keep TSEs out of the human food chain. Our Center for Disease Control and Prevention makes recommendations on the side of caution. So recommendations to hunters that we have on our website and CDC has on their website. A couple of those recommendations would be that hunters should wear latex or rubber gloves when field dressing an animal. If hunters are in an area where that state has detected CWD, CDC makes recommendation they should consider having their animal tested for CWD. And if their animal is positive, they recommend that hunters don't eat that animal. So the bottom line is that the risk does appear low, but we can't say it's zero. A little bit about transmission. Not all TSEs are contagious, but CWD is. Uptake is believed to be mostly oral. There's two main forms, direct and indirect. Animals can get it by direct transmission. That'd be animal to animal, mainly through bodily fluids like saliva, urine, and feces. Also, carcasses can be infectious. Indirect transmission would be where an animal contaminates an environment, and then that environment actually transmits the disease to another animal. The environment can be contaminated by carcasses, saliva, urine, and feces. And there are concerns about environmental reservoirs out there where you might have congregations of animals, like at mineral licks, feeding, baiting sites, where that disease can be concentrated into an area. A little bit more about transmission. Prions are virtually indestructible. They're resistant to many of the common disinfectants. They're resistant to just about everything: heat, sunlight, radiation, other techniques you'd use to clean or disinfect materials. You can't cook meat. If you cook meat, no matter how much you cook it, it would not get rid of CWD. In fact, some studies have shown where they've actually incinerated infectious material up to over 1,100 degrees Fahrenheit, and they've taken that ash and inoculated, I think it was hamsters, and some of those actually got CWD. So it's a very persistent material. Prions can persist in the environment also for potentially decades and remain infectious to susceptible animals. Certain plants can also uptake levels of the prion from contaminated substrates. So there does indicate a potential that there could be transmission that way. There's still more research that needs to be done on that, but the fact is plants can uptake CWD. There's also some studies that have shown certain types of soil, clay soils in particular, can bind to the infectious material, increasing the persistence and infectivity of those soils. Another important factor of transmission is that CWD has a long incubation period, months to years. 16 months to 5 years is what's been documented so far. And really critical to this whole thing is that during that incubation period, for the most part, those animals are non-clinical. You can't tell they have chronic wasting disease, and they're also infectious, so they're spreading the disease during that period. So real briefly here on disease impacts, there's been some recent research that has documented mortality and herd growth implications due to chronic wasting disease, and this has really caused some recent alarm in the wildlife management community. These few studies here and this brief summary, I actually took it from a USGS site, but it kind of highlights some of the more important recent ones, at least the last three in particular. But just for example, in Colorado, in a mule deer population where they had high prevalence rate, 25%, they also saw some high mortality rates in their CWD animals, and the population growth was less than one, and this is an unhunted population. If you remember, population growth rate of 1 would be stable, greater than 1 would be increasing, and less than 1 would be decreasing. Also in Colorado, in an elk study, where they had 13% prevalence rates, they also documented high mortality rates in those animals with CWD, and they had a population growth rate of 1. Also in Colorado, not in a published study here, but they've been analyzing their herd structure in areas with CWD and areas without, and they believe they're seeing some impacts to their buck egg structure in those herds. In other words, those areas where they have chronic wasting disease, They're not seeing that older age structure anymore, so they believe it's impacting the age of buck deer in those areas. A couple more examples in Wyoming and white-tailed deer. Again, you kind of see the common theme here, high prevalence rates in the study area, mortality rates were 4.5 times higher in those positive animals, and the population growth rate was 0.9, meaning 10% decline. And again, in Wyoming and mule deer, again, high prevalence rates, mortality rates were 2.5 times higher, and the population growth rate of 0.74, which basically means a 25%, 26% decrease. And even in our own backyard, you know, Wind Cave has documented high levels of chronic wasting disease and mortality rates that actually exceed the recruitment, so a declining population. I guess the bottom line is we have evidence is really, really building to show that and to suggest that, you know, in those populations, those heavily infected cervid populations with CWD, that those cervids will not survive long term with those type of mortality rates. So a little bit about distribution now. Here's a map put out by USGS showing the distribution. The gray areas are of wild cervids, and the dots are of captive cervid facilities. Yellow dots, so ones have been depopulated, and red dots are current positives. CWD was first discovered in 1967, actually in a mule deer in Colorado, is a wildlife captive research facility. Since then, it's been detected in 25 states, 2 Canadian provinces, also South Korea, Finland, and Norway. Like Chad mentioned earlier, it is a captive and wild cervid disease and disease management issue. So focusing in on South Dakota here, there's a map inset there on the bottom. The red is what we have blown up here to better demonstrate the distribution in the state. We first discovered CWD in South Dakota in 1997. It was in a captive elk facility. We've since then have documented in both mule deer, white-tailed deer species, and also elk in the wild populations. This map is a map of all the positives we have of wild cervids. This is from all different types of sampling strategies, and I'll get into that here in the next few slides. But you can see here the blue are the positive samples that we've collected from deer, and the red would be the elk. Bottom line, there's been 4 counties we've detected positive CWD animals in the state: Fall River, Custer, Pennington, and Lawrence. So diving into some of the specific CWD surveillance data that we have. This is a little busy, I apologize, but there are some important data I think to go over here. First off, we've broken out all of our samples into 3 main categories. 6 surveillance methods: hunter harvest and roadkill or other. It could be research, it could be city controlled deer. But those 3 main sample categories. We use hunter harvest data. That's the main method that we use to detect or to estimate prevalence. It's the most random sample we have. So we gotta be careful we don't compare areas with different sampling strategies. Hunter harvest is what we're gonna use and talk about for prevalence. But 6 surveillance is important. It's important for detecting the disease, looking at presence, absence, and seeing what's out there. So we obviously collect those data as well. So those are the 3 different sampling strategies, 3 main areas that we've broken it out into here for elk, Wind Cave, CSP, and the Black Hills. The bottom half of the graph is sample sizes, which we always want to talk about, especially when we're estimating prevalence rates. So let's just focus in on hunter harvest for discussion purposes today. And then I'm just going to look at a couple time periods here. The last 5 years, that's this time period here. We have the best sample size there and probably most reflective of where we currently are. It's the most recent time period. We also like to look at current year, but just we always need to go back and look at sample sizes. We can't say a whole lot with some of our small sample sizes, and we're looking at just 1 year picture. So I'll focus this on the 5-year average there, if you will. For Wind Cave, we're at about 15.4% prevalence in our adult elk. For CSP, at about 11.1, and the rest of the Black Hills, 1.4. We also do the same thing for deer. But we don't have a lot of samples for deer over the last 5 years, so we're going to look at overall sample numbers here. So for mule deer, looking at all years, but just harvest samples, In the Prairie, we have sample sizes of about 3,200 and about 1,000 in the Black Hills. Prevalence rate of 1.4 in the Prairie and 0.1 in the Black Hills. For white-tailed deer, overall, our sample sizes aren't bad. 3,200 in the Prairie, 6,000 in the Hills, and about 230 in CSP. For prevalence rate of 2.1 on the Prairie, 0.1 in the Black Hills, and 0.9 in Custer State Park. And with that, I'll turn it over to Chad to talk about some management and strategies.
Any questions thus far for Andy or myself? Keep plugging away. We'll get to the end. So this current slide, so, you know, not to put the scare into everybody on this, but this is kind of a big deal. There's lots of unknowns with chronic wasting disease. In particular, how can this disease affect deer and elk populations, not only 5 years from now, but let's look out 25, 50 years from now. You know, scientific community has been really, really tuned into chronic wasting disease for not a long period of time. And I think there's things we've learned here recently within, you know, the previous 5 years in particular. I can remember when I was working in Nebraska, we found chronic wasting disease in the wild, way out in the Western Panhandle. And we thought, my God, if this gets into the Platte River system and moves east, well, 10, 15 years later, they have chronic wasting disease clear on the eastern end of the state around Omaha. And, you know, how is that going to impact their herd the next 10, 20, 30 years? So, you know, you're all familiar with aquatic invasive species, AIS. You know, it's not apples to apples, but probably something to consider. I think you're going to see some of the things that we talked to you about in regards to outreach and education and how we can use our communication staff to help us provide awareness and whatnot to our public. I think you're going to see some very similar suggestions and work being done by the department. So a department priority, you know, this was identified here recently back in April when our department executive team was meeting in regards to the strategic plan and the review process on how things are coming along and what might be priorities here for 2018 or into the near future. And I'm not going to read it, but you can see that sub-bullet there. The department did recognize as chronic wasting disease is a priority for the department to try to manage that the best we can. So with that, you know, we were tasked to start to work on this, and we're hopping on this. A work group was developed. I'm not going to list all the internal work group members there, but you can see a diverse group of biologists and administrators and folks from our communication staff, law enforcement, staff from Custer State Park, things of those natures. I mean, I think we have a good group of staff there with a unique background and strong skill sets. There will be other numerous staff, obviously not listed on here, that were going to be important in regards to logistics and implementation of whatever we end up moving forward with as a department. So why now a priority for the department? I mean, we've known we've had CWD in the state for 15, 17 years. We have done some work back in the day when we had federal funding that was made available to the states to test deer and elk and try to you know, determine where this disease might be presence or absence and to try to develop the best you could some type of prevalence rate to try to track that. We lost that funding back in 2011 or 12. I'm not saying it wasn't a priority. We just had other things going on at the time. Recent developments across the western states. Well, not just western states. I mean, there's been states in the southeast and northeast that have dealt with chronic wasting disease, a lot of updates in research and our knowledge on the disease. You know, I mean, deer and elk are important. I mean, how much time have we spent the last couple of years talking about deer management and elk management and how socially important that is to not only our residents but our visitors? So, I mean, this is a big deal. We first met in June 20th here, so just a couple weeks ago. We had a lot of discussion on what the expectations were and the desired outcomes of that group. We discussed numerous items and settled on, I guess, what I would call is, you know, nothing set in stone right now, but as a group, this is kind of where we're set with five major objectives. limit the spread of CWD from our known areas where we know we have it. Public education, to have an informed public, is going to be crucial in the success of anything we try to do in regards to managing this disease. Determining the prevalence rates, as Andy just kind of talked about, and if we're going to spend the money and time to determine a prevalence rate, what are going to be the thresholds for certain management actions? I mean, we need to identify that moving forward. Determining presence and absence and public involvement is going to be crucial. That's kind of in conjunction with public education, but we need to involve not only our public, but you'll see in a later slide, there's a lot of stakeholders and other groups of the public we need to involve with this process. So several items were identified from this first meeting group or work group meeting. Action items identified, staff assigned to those action items, and this presentation is one of those action items. This is kind of to set the stage to inform you on the disease and share with you what we think our thought process is moving forward, get some feedback from you folks. Do you have any concerns, comments, or other suggestions for us? So moving on here, and I'm not going to spend a great deal of time on this. We are going to make this version of our presentation or a similar version available to the public. I know the public can't see all these slides. I know you folks are probably had a long day and want to hit the road or whatnot, but we feel it's important to go over this. So limit the spread of CWD. So obviously there's numerous ways to maybe try to approach that. One is looking at interstate, which would be from one state to the other, or intrastate transportation rules, a movement of harvested deer or elk within South Dakota itself. There's several variations of that across the country. We don't have to come up with new things. There's lots of other states that have been dealing with this. There's some good things out there that we can look at, review, have discussions on internally with you as a commission, and implement on what we feel might be appropriate. Baiting and feeding of wildlife, you know, we're reviewing laws and rules of other states on that. I don't foresee us making at least any immediate changes to those rules right now, but just to continue to educate and inform the public as to, hey, if this practice is going to be occurring when it is legal within the state, here's some things to consider about when it comes to the transmission of disease when you concentrate individuals. And then as we started out, it's also an issue for captive deer and elk, and there are numerous captive deer and elk facilities that are licensed within the state of South Dakota that is has oversight of the South Dakota Animal Industry Board. We have a very good working relationship with AIB. We have informed them of our efforts and interest to increase our management efforts on this disease. And after this meeting, probably next week, we're going to be setting up a meeting to have further discussions with AIB and the state veterinarian and their staff to, you know, just talk about some things and how do we work best moving forward to manage this. Just a little slide here, just talking about the interstate transportation of animals across the country going from one state to the other. You can see, you know, there's been some work that's already been put together, and there's varying rules and regulations amongst the states. I think as a work group, we're probably trying to lean on throwing South Dakota from the green into at least the orange, preferably the red there, which would allow no high-risk body parts from a deer or elk, regardless of the status of chronic wasting disease within that state, to make it as simple and clean as possible. Obviously, we got lots of things to work on and things to consider before coming in front of you as a commission and bringing forward recommendations on that topic, but just to put that on your radar screen. Intrastate movement, as Andy mentioned, that prion disease, or that prion is about darn near indestructible. So I had our GIS staff put together some maps. So this is just looking at, you know, let's look at Black Hills resident license holders. So these, not all of these hunters harvested a deer, but we know success is high. Let's say it's 70%. Obviously, a lot of folks that hunt deer in the Black Hills are from that area, but we have numerous hunters that travel to the hills and likely take that harvested deer carcass back to them. You know, if body parts from that animal, the spinal cord or whatnot, ends up in a shelter belt or somebody's landfill in Coddington, Minnehaha County, Brown County, what are the possibilities of that prion being taken up by plants or spread from that aspect? And we know that's been occurring. Is this something we need to, you know, pony up our game and try to do the things best to try to restrict the movement of that disease? We're not going to contain it. We're not going to get rid of it. But what can we do best working with our hunters and the public to minimize the movement? So I'm not going to go over these slides, but just to kind of show you where, you know, and if you come back here, you look at the Black Hills, look at those 8%, look where they're coming from to South Dakota and where they may or have the likelihood of taking deer back home. So not only thinking of our own boundary, but of our neighboring states as well. Again, in summary, there's thousands of carcasses transported annually from areas within South Dakota that we know we have chronic wasting disease, and we need to start talking about that. So we've got some good information that's already been compiled by whether it's the American Fish and Wildlife Association, other entities like that have put together some really valuable information in regards to how other states and provinces, you remember that map Andy had up there, there's chronic wasting disease up in Alberta and Saskatchewan and numerous other states. So we have some great information in front of us. How are other states, how are they handling stuff when it comes to, you know, who has responsibility of oversight of captive servants within the state? What are some of their standard state regulations that might be applicable to some of the restrictions or requirements that we may or may not be entertaining? You know, CWD regulations, new regulations coming out. What kind of testing programs do those states have on captive cervids and or even free roaming wildlife, the feeding and baiting regulations within those states, the movements of animal parts. There's some states that require a hunter to only take back boneless meat. That's all you can take from the field to home. Now that's a pretty extreme. Is that something we need to do here or not? I think we have to impose regulations and rules that you know, that we can get cooperation from our hunters. I mean, hunters are going to be critical for us in managing this disease, and we got to be somewhat practical, yet we have to have meaningful rules and restrictions put in place. So that's going to be a very challenging for us as a department and you as a commission to try to find that sweet spot on where we can, you know, have the highest level of participation from our hunters, yet have some meaning in the rules we impose or apply to try to manage this disease the best we can. And then just recently, department staff reviewed and the department did submit comments on a best management practice document that was developed by AFWA, the Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies. A very good document. It covers a lot of the spectrum and categories and things that agencies need to be considering, and there's a great template there for us to start, and we've been reviewing that document and talking about some of the things that we can incorporate that we think would fit good here in South Dakota. Public education was another one of those objectives that we seen there, and Emily helped provide some information here. Again, not going to read everything here on this slide, but you know, a simple and easy one for us is to continue to update and enhance the information we have on our website and how we use social media to inform and educate our public. You know, to develop and enhance a list of frequently asked questions and a fact sheet, not only for the public, but our staff, our hunters, our governor's office, legislators, just to get everybody up to speed as to why this is an issue and why we feel it's important to make some changes or be proactive when it comes to managing this disease. Again, not going to read all that stuff, but you folks will be updated as we move forward on this. Monitoring and management actions. This is probably going to be one of the hardest ones for us as a department to decide at what level do we need to move forward, what level of engagement do we need from our hunters, sampling areas, sample size, how do we get the samples? Is it voluntary by the hunters or mandatory within certain areas? We've really struggled with voluntary samples. You just don't get what you need to get to have meaningful power within the samples you get from a statistical standpoint. Possible coordination with commercial meat processors or taxidermists to try to obtain samples. It's going to be difficult for our staff to pull lymph nodes from the upper head area on mature bucks, and we might have to work with hunters to follow them back to their taxidermists to obtain those samples. We now have that requirement within Custer State Park, and we've got to work on some of those logistics. We impose those regulations and rules, and we need to make sure we follow up on the intent of those. So determining presence and absence of the disease. You know, we've been doing sick surveillance across the entire state. Our sample size is probably not the best. I'll throw out maybe we have 750 to 1,000 deer that may have been sampled over the last 15 years through our sick surveillance program. But you know, it probably makes most sense to start around those endemic areas or areas we know we have chronic wasting disease and maybe sample at whatever level that might be. We don't know if it's a hunting unit yet or a county or a DAU, our data analysis units that we analyze all of our biological data that we use to bring recommendations for you on hunting seasons. But, do we start there? And then once we meet the sample size that we feel we need for statistical strong data, then we can maybe move out throughout the state on some type of rotation. Public involvement recently, in fact, it was the same day or day after our first work group meeting. Excuse me, we used the assessment tool that was recently developed by Cindy and whatnot, and I think where we came up with this was a score of a 3.3, and to be honest, we really haven't had time as a work group to talk about this, but I think we're probably this rises above the category of informing or soliciting input, but I think we need to involve our stakeholders and members of the public. But we'll talk more about that, and you'll probably see some varying levels of public involvement. With that, I guess, and maybe we can talk about this after we're done here, Mr. Chair, we'd like to open up an invitation to have a commissioner to be a part of our work group and go through the process of those discussions and deliberation and just how we move forward. So we'd open that up and would sure welcome two of you or however many want to join us on these discussions. So I guess in summary, it's always a fatal disease. It does have the ability to inhibit population growth. That is a concern of ours. There has been some literature that suggests it can have an impact, negative impact on populations. As of right now, we do not know of any way to eliminate this disease from the environment. That third bullet there, I think, is key and huge. We need to educate and inform hunters, non-hunters, everybody about this disease of what it is and what we are doing, why, how, and when, all those things. And I think the fourth one there is big. I mean, we have a lot of interest in these species. It's important to a lot of different people for varying reasons, and we want to ensure we have a long-term health and sustainable population of our two great deer species and elk that are so valuable within the Black Hills. And And I think, you know, we're going to be probably bringing some things to you in early January, you know, the early parts of 2019 to possibly have some new rules or regulations put in place for the 2019 hunting seasons. And I guess I'm about burnt out here. You guys are probably too, so I will stop, and Andy and I will certainly try to answer any questions you might have.
One thing I haven't noticed in here is a significant source of this for us is Wind Cave. I did not see anything that says we are planning to collaborate or work with them. Do they have some kind of a plan in place here, or anything we can coordinate with to work together on this? It would seem we should be in some type of a partnership here to jointly
Andy,
try
you
to
handle
stem
that,
this.
Okay. I'll turn that over to Andy.
Okay.
Yeah, Andy Lindblom here again, senior big game biologist. Yeah, I think working with Wind Cave is going to be an important part of this process moving forward. I don't know exactly what that's going to look like. They're spending a fair amount of time and effort right now studying CWD and Wind Cave and trying to better assess and estimate the impacts on those populations. So I think a lot of the data and some of the research is going to come out of there. Hopefully it's something that we can use. But when that's all said and done, too, I couldn't agree more that we need to coordinate on what we're doing versus what they're doing. They do have a pretty extensive fence around the park, so a lot of cervid movement has been reduced in and out of the park. So it does present some different situations than before, but we still need to coordinate and need to make sure that's keep that on our list.
Okay. Doug?
Chairman, Commissioner Sharp here. I have a question and then a potential observation. Did the fire in Custer State Park, did that burning of the grass possibly mitigate some of the potential sources for this? Because I know it can go into plant-based stuff. So did the fire maybe clean up some stuff? And maybe there's no way of knowing. And then my observation is sometimes our goals are limited by our imagination. And I would hope that our goal is to become the benchmark for the country in managing this chronic wasting disease. So I would hope that the plan you come up with is loftier than you could possibly just kind of think, well, let's go do this. Let's go farther than we think we can, if possible.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Sharp, what impact did the fire have on that prion on the landscape there in Custer State Park? I don't know the answer to that. I don't personally know of any way to quantify how that could have influenced the availability of that prion within Custer State Park. We do know the disease is there. I think myself and the big game staff or any biologist that's been in Custer State Park, and I'm sure if Matt's here, he can testify. Yeah, we know there was some damage, but that fire was pretty special for habitat management, and we're seeing some nice effects of that and will for many years to come. I appreciate the challenge there, Commissioner Sharp, to not just do the status quo as maybe some other states have, but we've got some good staff working on this, and we will do our best to raise the bar when it comes to this. Challenge accepted.
Any comments? Okay. More to come.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, guys. Tom, you have?
I just spoke with Tom. I mean, the Sportsman Against Hunger update is important, but it's not timely. It's something that we can hold over to Yankton. If you want to just talk about just a couple minutes on the license sales stuff that Scott has, and we'll be on our way then. If it's your prerogative to be done, we can be done too, Mr. Chairman. It
makes no difference to me. I don't work by the hour anyway. Yeah, I see that. Okay, let's adjourn for the day. Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I wanted to commend the commission. I mean, there's a lot of topics we covered today in one day, which is unusual. We normally spread it over 2 days. I thought all your comments were thoughtful. I mean, I thought you were engaging, and you know, I thought the public did an excellent job today, which we appreciate. And I always will applaud, you know, anytime there's a civil discourse, particularly happens on social media, that's a positive thing. And you know I can't control that. I'd like to, but I like to, you know, can keep it positive. That's wonderful. Staff has done some outstanding work, but in particular, I want to, you know, I know Mike up in Northeast has had a yeoman share of work related to non-meandered waters, and Kevin in particular. He started off today, and you could tell that Kevin's taken a lot of brunt. There's been a lot of criticism and a lot of support of what's happened here, but he's covered it. For the last year, do you think about any difficult task that we've had, Kevin's had it. It's like the commercial, want me to let Mikey try it. And he's done an outstanding job, and you could see, you know, even in the year, how much more polished he is and comfortable he is with the microphone, so that's certainly noticeable. You know, and I know, Kevin, you know, your little kids coming at home may not recognize it, may not care, but we care, and you've done a wonderful job. And, you know, I hope that people on social media respect that, because you're absolutely sincere. You wear your heart on your sleeve. We see that. So kudos for me. Thank you very much, and thank you, Commissioners. Have a good trip home, and I'll see many of you in Eugene.
Okay, thank you.
Second.
Okay, thanks, everybody, for the day.